Israel orders more evacuations in Khan Yunis.
Look at the destruction. Everyone has left their tents, and the situation is really bad.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky acknowledges their attack on Russian soil for the first time.
Ukraine is proving that it can indeed restore justice and ensure the necessary pressure on the aggressor.
And, tired of bumper-to-bumper traffic? A flying car might be the answer, and they could be here sooner than you think.
That's a one pilot, four passengers, 100 miles of range. Travels 150 miles an hour, sustainable, it's quieter than a helicopter.
Today is Monday, August 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strobe. Israel expanded evacuation orders in Khan Yunis in the southern Gaza Strip overnight, forcing tens of thousands of Palestinian residents and displaced families to flee. Reuters correspondent David Doyle has the story.
The Israeli military said it was attacking militants from the Hamas group, who were using the areas to stage attacks and fire rockets. An announcement on X and sent to residents' phones said they should evacuate immediately, for your own safety, to a newly created humanitarian zone. But Palestinian and UN officials say there are no safe areas in the enclave. It's a view echoed by Ayman Mekdad as she fled on Sunday.
Look at the destruction. Everyone has left their tents, and the situation is really bad. Where are the countries? Why they leave us alone like that? The children who are being torn to pieces are not to blame, and ruin everywhere.
Gazans also complain they've been forced to move multiple times. This man is saying it's the 12th time he's had to flee since October 7th. That was the day Hamas militants stormed into southern Israel, killing 1,200 people and taking 250 hostages, according to Israeli tallies. Since then, nearly 40,000 Palestinians have been killed in the Israeli offensive, the Gaza Health Ministry says. In Khan Yunis, the evacuation order covered districts in the center, east, and west. That makes it one of the largest such orders in the 10-month-old conflict, and comes just 2 days after tanks returned to the east of the city. Later on Sunday, an Israeli airstrike near the market at the center of the city killed four Palestinians and wounded several others, medics said. Lines of smoke rose from areas where Israeli planes carried out attacks in the eastern and western parts of Khan Yunis. Residents said two multi-floor buildings were bombed. The evacuation order also follows the killing of at least 90 people, according to Gaza's Civil Defense Service, in an Israeli airstrike on a school where displaced Palestinians were sheltering. That incident on Saturday prompted international outcry. The Israeli military said it had struck a Hamas and Islamic Jihad command post, killing 19. The two groups rejected that claim, which they said was being used as a pretext.
That was Reuters correspondent David Doyle. The Pentagon says U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has ordered a guided missile submarine to the Middle East and is telling the USS Abraham Lincoln Aircraft Carrier Strike Group to sail more quickly to the area. The move comes as the U.S. and other allies push for Israel and Hamas to achieve a ceasefire agreement that could help calm soaring tensions in the region following the assassination of Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran and a senior Hezbollah commander in Beirut. Late Thursday, Israel confirmed it will send negotiators for indirect discussions with Hamas, a U.S.-designated terrorist group, in response to a proposal by the United States, Egypt, and Qatar to resume stalled ceasefire talks on August 15th. U.S. National Security Advisor John Kirby spoke to reporters about the proposal on Friday.
It's the right deal at the right time. It will save lives. And you know what? It's going to also advance Israel's security. It brings relief as well to civilians in Gaza. And so we're going to do everything we can to get it done.
But some leaders in Israel are critical of the proposal. Kirby told reporters that senior Israeli minister Bezalel Smotrich's criticism of the latest proposed ceasefire deal is, quote, dead wrong, and that, quote, they're misleading the Israeli public. and that it won't stop President Joe Biden from moving forward with the proposal.
President Biden's going to continue to do what's right. He has Israel's back against Iran and its proxy groups. He has Israel's back on this deal. He won't allow extremists to blow things off course, including extremists in Israel.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky acknowledged for the first time that Ukrainian forces were fighting in the surprise offensive in Russia's Kursk on Saturday. Early on Sunday, debris from a destroyed Ukrainian missile fell onto a 9-story residential building, resulting in injuries to at least 13 people, according to Kursk officials. Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo reports.
In his nightly video address on Saturday, Zelensky said he had discussed with Ukraine's top commander the actions to, quote, push the war into the aggressor's territory.
Ukraine is proving that it can indeed restore justice and ensure the necessary pressure on the aggressor.
Sunday marked the sixth day of intense battles amid Kyiv's largest incursion into Russian territory since the start of the war. Russian President Vladimir Putin cast the Ukrainian attack as a major provocation. Russia imposed a sweeping security regime in 3 border regions on Saturday, while its ally Belarus sent more troops to its border with Ukraine. In the city of Kursk, footage showed a damaged 9-story apartment building on fire. It was not clear whether there was further damage from the destroyed Ukrainian missile. Reuters was able to confirm the location of the video, but could not independently verify the date it was filmed. Meanwhile, Russia's defense ministry said on Sunday it had destroyed 14 Ukrainian drones and 4 tactical ballistic missiles overnight over the Kursk region. Additionally, 18 drones were said to have been destroyed over other Russian regions that Ukraine frequently attacks.
That was Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo. Speaking to Ukrainian political commentator Mykolai Davidyuk, VOA's Lori London asked about what this means for Ukraine and what Russia's response might look like.
That showed that the war may not be under control. What Putin promised in a shadow to some Western political leaders. And he tried to show that he is so strong and can control everything inside Ukraine. And now Ukraine showed that we have possibilities, even sometimes without using Western weapons. I think what's going on in Kursk region make nervous a little bit the West, but all our neighbors, such as Baltic states and Poland, they smiling and they so motivated on that. But I think one player who looking on that and studying, and that is China, because China also may be interesting if they see that Russia is too weak. They may be motivated to do the same on Siberia or in their territories, which was occupied by Russia 150 or 60 years ago. And so they are looking on this situation very seriously. For them, it's interesting their huge and strong neighbor could be so weak. And I think that's not only perspective of the West, but it's also perspective of China. When like 1,000 people come to the territory, half of the week, and also going through the region towards the atomic power station.
Does it raise the danger level for Ukraine for some serious, even more serious retaliation?
What may happen more seriously than it happened after these 2.5 years? They striking all the time in Ukraine, in Western Ukraine, in Eastern Ukraine, 40 to 50 strikes in Kherson. They targeted the maternity house, the civilian buildings, Okhmadit, the hospital, the children's hospital. What may happen worse when Ukrainian army entered Russia and show that they are not so strong as they trying to show themselves, just the 1,000 of militaries. And that's also a good message to NATO. When the many European politicians or Western politicians say like, oh, we don't know how to fight against Russia, they're so strong, Putin sends so strong messages. But when we check this situation, that is a question of courage and leadership. This operation planned and stand on two huge values, that is courage and leadership. So I'm not sure that Russia may act more aggressively. We saw that during these 2.5 years. So we want to show a message to NATO and the rest of the world that you may fight with Russia. What Boris Johnson wrote in his column in British media, that West is 20 times bigger and stronger. So that is the message.
That was VOA's Lori London speaking with Ukrainian political commentator Mykolai Davidyuk. Also on Sunday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky accused Russian forces of lighting a fire on the premises of the occupied Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine, and that it was visible from Kyiv-held territory. In a statement on Telegram, Zelensky said radiation indicators were normal. A local official in the Ukrainian city of Nikopol, which looks out onto the plant, said there was unofficial information that Russian forces had set fire to automobile tires in the cooling towers. We're following these other stories from around the world. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's announcement this week that he has ordered a 10-day block on access to social media platform X in Venezuela is the latest in a series of efforts by his government to try to suppress information sharing among the population voicing doubts about his claim to victory in the July 28th presidential election. It remained unclear how the government is carrying out the ban on X. Some users in the capital, Caracas, could still access and refresh the application on their phones without using a virtual private network. More than 40 families of victims of an airliner crash in Brazil have gathered at a morgue and at hotels in Sao Paulo as three French government investigators arrived in the country. Forensics experts worked on Sunday to identify the remains of the 62 people killed in the crash on Friday. Local authorities say the bodies of the pilot and the co-pilot were the first to be identified by forensics experts. The people of the English town of Southport have come together for the first of the funerals for the three girls murdered during a Taylor Swift-themed dance class. They remembered 9-year-old Alice da Silva Aguiar's radiant smile and called for an end to the unrest in Britain since the attack 2 weeks ago. Hundreds of mourners packed St. Patrick's Catholic Church on Sunday and spilled into the street outside, which had been decorated with pink ribbons and balloons in Alice's honor. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, former President Donald Trump announced that one of his campaign websites was hacked. While details are still coming in, Trump's VP pick, J.D. Vance, granted several news interviews Sunday in which he attacked the Democratic presidential ticket. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris and her running mate, Tim Walz, continue rallying supporters on the campaign trail with a focus on the economy. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias reports.
News that the Trump campaign has been hacked continued making headlines hours after Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump first posted about it Saturday on his Truth social media platform. The post read, "We were just informed by Microsoft Corporation that one of our many websites was hacked by the Iranian government. Iranian officials have rejected the accusations." The documents allegedly hacked reportedly included information about Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance. He appeared Sunday on several news shows, but questions focused on the presidential race. On ABC's This Week show, the Ohio senator brushed off renewed criticism on controversial pro-family statements he's made in the past and redirected the attention to the policies of the Democratic presidential ticket.
Why are we talking about inflation? Why are we talking about the fact that groceries are unaffordable thanks to Kamala Harris's policies?
The economy was also a talking point at a Saturday rally for Vice President Harris in Las Vegas, Nevada.
And it is my promise to everyone here, when I am president, we will continue our fight for working families of America. Including to raise the minimum wage and eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
Trump made a similar pledge in the past and accused Harris of stealing his no taxes on tips policy. Even as calls grow for Harris to provide more details about her economic plans, the campaign's momentum is undeniable, said Democratic U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar on ABC.
She has ignited the country, starting in Philadelphia to the heartlands of Wisconsin, to that jam-packed rally in Arizona with 15,000 plus people. People are interested in moving forward.
Harris will fly back to Washington Sunday after attending a political event in San Francisco. She and President Joe Biden are expected to make a public appearance together Thursday in Maryland. Donald Trump is scheduled to give remarks about the economy Wednesday in Asheville, North Carolina. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations Refugee Agency warns seasonal rains and severe flooding in war-torn Sudan are worsening the plight of thousands of displaced people in dire need of humanitarian aid. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Heavy rains and flooding have upended the lives of tens of thousands of people in Sudan this year, displacing, injuring, and killing many. The United Nations Refugee Agency reports torrential rains and floods over the past 2 weeks are having a devastating impact on the lives of thousands of refugees and internally displaced who have fled the more than year-long civil war in Sudan. UNHCR spokesperson Olga Serrada says more than 11,000 people in the eastern Kassala state are in desperate straits. They include displaced people hosted by the local communities and many families who recently fled from violence in Sennar state.
Some have been displaced 3 or 4 times already since the start of the conflict. They have lost their belongings, including food rations, and are facing significant challenges in accessing clean water and sanitation facilities, increasing the risk of waterborne diseases.
The International Organization for Migration reports more than 10 million people have become displaced inside Sudan since war broke out in mid-April 2023, and 2 million more people have sought refuge in neighboring countries. The UNHCR reports Sudan continues to host around 1 million refugees and asylum seekers from other countries. Serrato says the UNHCR is pre-positioning relief items and shelter kits in the eastern and western parts of the country where more rainfall is expected. She says flooding in the Darfur region is causing particular concern, as this will further limit the ability of aid agencies to reach thousands of destitute people.
The humanitarian needs are reaching epic proportions in the region as hundreds of thousands of civilians remain in harm's way, and famine has been recently confirmed in a displacement site, as you all know. Conflict has already destroyed crops and disrupted livelihoods. The climate crisis is making those displaced even more vulnerable now.
Serrato explains people are unable to grow their crops and graze their livestock when the land becomes flooded. She warns this will cause hunger to surge, especially in areas where conflict is hampering humanitarian aid from reaching people in desperate need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strope. Bangladesh's Chief Justice Obaidul Hassan resigned Saturday following new protests by a group of students and other demonstrators as the country's new interim government, led by Nobel laureate Muhammad Yunus, started functioning days after a mass uprising forced Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina to resign and flee to India. Asif Nasrul, law, justice, and parliamentary affairs advisor to the interim government, said in a video message posted on Facebook that his office received the resignation letter and they would forward it to the country's figurehead president, Mohammad Shahabuddin, for further procedures. 5 other top judges in the Supreme Court also resigned later on Saturday in an attempt by the new government to reorganize the judiciary. Residents fled their homes on Sunday as a fast-moving wildfire outside Athens, fueled by hot, windy weather, burned trees, houses, and cars, and sent smoke clouds over the Greek capital. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino reports.
Residents of the Greek town of Bernavis fled their homes on Sunday as hundreds of firefighters battled a fast-moving wildfire just outside Athens. This resident says the fire, quote, started from one point and suddenly the whole village was surrounded. Thick clouds of smoke could be seen drifting over the tourist hotspot. A fire brigade spokesperson said flames were reaching as much as 25 meters high, swallowing up trees. Evacuation alerts are in place for 9 areas near Bernavis. Several other regions across Greece are on high alert for fire risk. Authorities have called for emergency measures involving the army, police, and volunteers to deal with forest fires until August 15. Hundreds of wildfires have broken out across Greece since May. Scientists attribute their frequency and intensity to the increasingly hot and dry weather conditions linked to climate change. After its warmest winter on record and long periods of little or no rainfall, Greece also registered its hottest June and July. It is expected to record its hottest ever summer this year.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino. Paris has closed out 2.5 extraordinary weeks of Olympic sports and emotion with a star-studded show in France's National Stadium. It was an artistic show that celebrated Olympic themes, golden fireworks, and thousands of athletes partying into the night. The closing ceremony put a final flourish to Paris's first games in a century. The French capital has handed over hosting duties for the Summer Games to the next city in line, Los Angeles, in 2028. Hollywood star Tom Cruise descended from the top of the stadium to the Mission Impossible theme song before taking the Olympic flag from star gymnast Simone Biles, putting it on the back of a motorcycle, and driving out of the stadium. Flying cars, long the dream of futurists, may finally be here. From California, Matt Dibble has our story about the rise of electric aircraft.
Spectators gathered in Sausalito, California recently to watch an unusual flight. The Helix, made by Silicon Valley company Pivotal, is among the first electric aircraft to take flight in what some are calling a new era of aerial mobility. Aircraft that can take off vertically without a runway and then fly like a plane have been anticipated for decades. Advances in engine technology and lightweight materials have helped bring about this moment, says Pivotal CEO Ken Carklin.
The biggest driver of all, though, is actually the energy storage. And so the batteries, the energy storage of the batteries are getting better and better every couple of years, driven by the mass adoption of electric vehicles we're seeing on the road today.
The Helix will appeal most to those who love to fly and who can afford a $200,000 personal aircraft that is currently limited by battery storage to 20 minutes of flying time. More people are likely to have their first electric aircraft experience in an air taxi, like Archer Aviation's Midnight. Brian Bernhardt is Archer's chief growth and infrastructure officer.
That's a one pilot, 4 passengers, 100 miles of range. Travels 150 miles an hour, sustainable, it's quieter than a helicopter. It's got 12 propellers. If any one of those propellers fails, it has the technology to be able to still make a safe landing.
The aircraft is undergoing government safety testing, but if all goes as planned, the company says they will be flying customers by the end of 2025.
What you see here is a mock-up of what a vertiport is like.
Archer has plans to operate air taxi services in several U.S. cities, including the San Francisco Bay Area, where air taxis would fly between existing airports and a new vertiport on the bay. The company projects that passengers will pay a fare comparable to a rideshare trip to the same location.
Going from city center to airport that costs $150 with rideshare can be $150 on our vehicle. Not only is that, you're getting a 2-hour drive that's turned into a 20-minute trip.
Mike Hirschberg is director of strategy for the Vertical Flight Society, an industry group.
There are some really compelling use cases when time is much more important than money, and eventually that'll get cheaper and cheaper over the years so that it's more affordable for common people.
Driven by the quest for zero-emission flight and lower operation costs, hundreds of manufacturers worldwide are vying to launch their version of an electric aircraft. Along with the proliferation of drones, the airspace could get crowded.
when you make that leap from tens or dozens to thousands, there's going to be need to be different types of air traffic management. So there's a lot of safety planning going into operation of electric aircraft in the future.
Many in this crowd seem eager to get on board. Matt Dibble, VOA News, Sausalito, California.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.